Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of free Washington, Spokane Valley. Once again, brought to you by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea Republican, in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And once again, this is the year we take our freedom back, because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Jeremiah 6:16 reminds us, I think we really need to pay attention to this. Stand at the crossroads and look. Ask for the ancient paths. Now, that means we are at a crossroads in our country. I think we all agree with that. Ask for the ancient paths. What are the ways of truth that have survived and have been successful throughout the ages? What are those ways? Ask where they are, and then when you find them, because they are going to be in Scripture, walk in them. And when you do that, you actually find rest. And I would say, I would add a corollary to that. I would think that the land that we as a people, as a nation, would find rest if we do that. And now from the front, your daily intelligence briefing. A lot in the news right now, but first, I want to just stay at the international level, talk about the Puerto Rico exit that is happening right now. A lot of people leaving Puerto Rico because of the economic downturn there, and people that say this stuff can't happen in the United States, it is happening in the United States, at least in one of the territories, where socialist and liberal policies have destroyed the economy there, to the point that they need kind of a bailout. And many people are just saying, nope, we're leaving. And the only thing really, that's offering hope is the fact that in other parts of the United States, people can go there. Because that was the whole idea behind one large republic being made up of smaller republics of states. You could weather these kind of storms. And that's what's happening. That's what we're seeing right now in Puerto Rico. Well, also on the international front, this interesting story about the attempted assassination of Julian Assange. And the idea that literally somebody tried to climb like Spider-Man up the side of the Ecuadorian embassy in London to kill him because, at least this is what's being implied, because of some of the upcoming WikiLeaks, it might have a direct influence on the presidential elections. Well, you got to understand what happened. So Hillary Clinton's emails were hacked. The guy that allegedly hacked them, Guccifer, is dead in his jail cell here a month and a half ago, a quote-unquote suicide. One of the other people that was alleged to have leaked the emails, or at least some of them, two WikiLeaks, ends up mysteriously killed. And now this happens. I mean, this is the context of what is going on. I was talking to somebody today about this, and it's just plain. Hillary's a crook, but the international implications now of all of this. We have a weak United States in the eyes of the world. And simply because of weak leadership, unethical leadership, immoral leadership, leadership that I think rightfully can be said to really be destroying the country, the fabric of the country. And I'm not just talking economics. I'm not just talking, technology. I'm talking the moral, constitutional fabric of the country. Now, obviously, this isn't just isolated to the Obama administration or Hillary Clinton being in there with her husband. I mean, it's been going on for a long time. But the international implications are very profound. And that's why I think a lot of countries in Europe are thinking they got to go things alone. Like the Czech Republic saying that people should stockpile food and water and, quote, prepare for the worst, end quote. Germany, same thing. Putting out literal documents on this stuff. A lot of people they're looking at the United States and wondering if there are people here still left that are going to stand up and say no. In fact, I came across an Australian Facebook page that said, Americans, keep your guns. Hold on to your guns, America. And their whole point was, look, they lost them in Australia. America is the last redoubt of freedom. In this part of the country, the Patriot Radio broadcasts in, is the last redoubt of freedom in the country. I mean, there's other places. People say, oh, well, what about Texas? Folks, the concentration of people that's here, and interestingly enough, a lot of people moving up here, is a redoubt of freedom, a stronghold of freedom. And there's no place else to run. There's no other place in the world to go. We need to make our stand, and we need to fight for that freedom and liberty here. Which brings us to the National Front and the election hack that occurred. Illinois, Arizona, probably other places. I mean, this is not isolated to these two states. They just found it there, okay? This is probably happening in other places. They don't want anybody to know. And then, extremely worrying, Department of Homeland Security says, well, elections are critical infrastructure. We need to oversee the elections. Now, that doesn't... I mean, they came out... You get to see this article. I mean, they came out and said that. And for years, many of us have been talking about the fact that electronic voting machines are the least secure way to vote. That mail-in ballots, like we have here in Washington, are prone, one of the most fraud-prone things, as far as elections are concerned, methodologies, as far as elections are concerned. So it shouldn't be a surprise, I guess, that this occurred, but the fact that what is more concerning is that DHS now wants to step in to oversee elections. Now, many of you listening to this program just kind of have this feeling like something's going to happen here before the election. But this, I mean, this is something that if you would have said it 6 months ago, they, you know, would have been poo-pooed as a conspiracy theory, and here it is right now. The nationalization of elections. Obviously concerning. Also on the national front, we are now 19.5. I want you to remember that number. 19.5 million, no, billion, nope, $1 trillion in debt. $19.5 trillion in debt. Folks, that is an unfathomable number. And there has to be a time of reckoning. I mean, just like we saw in Venezuela, where they literally ran out of money to buy the supplies to print more money, okay? Eventually, there is a point of reckoning. Eventually, there's a point of reckoning. Also on the national front, and I really, this is kind of near and dear to my heart. Our family came from Ireland, from County Kerry, Ireland, in the 1800s. We actually found the physical address of where our family came from. Came here to this country. Many people before that had died in the potato famine. Many people before that, after Cromwell's scourge, ended up in slavery, sent to Barbados and other British colonies, sent on prison ships. Many died during the voyage. Many more in slavery. And it was slavery. It wasn't like they had a choice. And there were some historians now that are trying to claim, well, that's just not exactly true. They were indentured servants. Folks, an indentured service was somebody that signed a contract, basically, I will be your slave for X period of years. We're not talking about they had a choice, okay? They were put into slavery. Women were abused. Irish women. And we're talking in the 1600s. Now, the Southern Poverty Law Center does not like that narrative. that the Irish were abused in their homeland, were abused and put into slavery, were put on prison ships throughout the entire world. A lot of Irish went to Australia, New Zealand. And in fact, the guy that wrote Schindler's List, Thomas Keneally, another book that he wrote was called The Great Shame, about this diaspora and Irish slavery. And now what we have is the Southern Poverty Law Center saying that that undermines the narrative of things like the Black Lives Matter movement. And so they're trying to push this history down. And this is what we see happening across the country, is this removal of fact, logic, reason, history, because when you do that, then and only then are you able to make communism and socialism actually make sense, when there's a vacuum of everything else, right? Because they can't defend their ideological position. It's destructive to America. And we need to get the truth out and use primary source documents to get the truth out. And I'll get to Sean Vestal and primary source documents here in a bit, but primary source documents are irrefutable. You can't go around it. And that's why I use them as much as I possibly can in my own writings, because people can't logically defeat it. What they're doing is they're parroting a liberal paradigm, a liberal talking point. And when you approach them with, well, actually, that's not true. Somebody the other day, in fact, said, no, the federal government owns all land. It comes from Anglo-Saxon history, 1,000 years. They said, that's absolutely not true. In fact, the founding fathers, if you actually read the debates around the Constitution, and then you read all of the documents from that point all the way till North Dakota, South Dakota, and Washington State coming into the Union, it's very clear. Federal government was only to be a caretaker until the states were up and running, and that title was extinguished by the federal government and turned over to the states. And in fact, the enabling acts of the states made provision for when that title would be turned over, that a certain percentage would go to fund education. And so this is there is no argument about this, because the primary source documents are crystal clear. And yet you'll have people trying to erase history to fit their own agenda. And the only antidote to that is the truth and using primary source documents. So if you're out there and you're wondering, how can I make a difference? How can I educate people? One is, go get the primary source document to back you up. Make your friend, family member, church member, pastor, whoever it is, read it. Read the primary source document, because that takes all of the questions out of it. Also on the national front, Hurricane Hermine down in Florida. And folks, I want you to pray especially for Chris Ann Hall. Many of you know Chris Ann Hall. She's a great friend of mine. Her house is directly in the path of that storm. So please pray for her right now and her family. They are moving to safety. We have a lot of patriots actually in that area that are helping her. And stand by to help her too. But please keep her and her family in your prayers. On the regional front, the University of Washington was shocked to find that all of a sudden, minimum wage destroyed jobs when the minimum wage was increased. Totally shocked. They did a scientific study and they couldn't believe it. But for everybody that owns a business or has dealt with that, it just does math. Minimum wage destroys jobs. Minimum wage increase destroys jobs. And makes it worse for everybody. So I find it just beyond interesting that even the University of Washington is now admitting that a minimum wage increase will destroy jobs. Also on the regional front, the 51st state, we had the voting contest for the 51st state, and the winner by a large margin for the 51st state movement for Eastern Washington, and hopefully someday North Idaho, Western Montana, the winner is Liberty. By a large margin. So, if you want to help design the new state flag for the state of Liberty, Please go onto Facebook and submit your proposals on Patriot Radio US and share it with us so that we can move forward with this. And I'm pretty excited. I hope you all are too. The State of Liberty. In fact, unsolicited, everybody wants the Capitol to be opportunity. And it's really, this is where this gets really cool, I think. Spokane Valley actually used to be called Opportunity. So literally the capital of free Washington, if it was going to be now the State of Liberty, there actually was a precedent for this in the past because Spokane Valley was called Opportunity. I love history. I love it. So please send in your suggestions for a state flag, and we'll make sure we're going to get this dropped here in December again as a bill to continue to push for this to happen. I want to talk about national parks being destroyed here for a second, too, on the regional front. Have some people saying that all we want to do with these federal lands transfer back to the state. And by the way, there is no such thing as federal lands or public lands. These are multi-use lands, okay, because all lands have different rights. Those rights are owned by different people, different entities, okay? So that's first and foremost. But national parks being destroyed is the whole purpose behind this movement. And it has nothing, this is a way to scare people. It has nothing to do with national parks. It has to do with the 245 million surface acres managed by, actually I would say mismanaged by, Bureau of Land Mismanagement. And 193 million surface acres mismanaged by the Forest Service. It has to do with the 700 million subsurface mineral estate acres mismanaged by the BLM, and 500 million that the Forest Service shares responsibility with. So this has nothing to do with national parks. It has to do with the fact that the federal government is not supposed to own that much land. And that's not parks. It also has to do with the fact the Constitution should mean what it says, and we should enforce it as it is written. Which brings us now to the local front and talking about Sean Vestal again. So Sean Vestal messaged me the other day, and Mr. Vestal was all of a sudden concerned with the accuracy of my post about him exposing him and his connections to the Communist Party USA and also the Council of American Islamic Relations, which was found in the Holy Land Foundation trial by a federal district court judge to be a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. So he was I mean, isn't that rich that he was upset at the accuracy of my post? So he said, and it's interesting too, he didn't object to any other thing in the post except one thing. So I apparently all the rest of it's accurate, but this is the one thing he objected to. He said, quote, all right, now I'm quoting. Okay. It would appear he's admitting the rest of this. Now, keep this in mind. Quote, it is incorrect that I have ever given money to PJALs. That's the Peace Justice Action League. Now, it's interesting. Now, this is the kind of stuff that's called disinformation that these news outlets do. The word money was never mentioned in my post anywhere. I never said money. What I said was he was a donor and supporter. And why did I say that? Well, because as part of Peace Justice Action League Bread Roses Dinner Auction, which is kind of their annual fundraiser apparently, in 2016, the Peace Justice Action League lists Sean Vestal under the headline Item Donors. And interestingly, on a kind of a side legal note, the donation of an item must be assigned a monetary value for tax purposes, so you actually could legitimately make the claim that he did donate money from a legal perspective, but I digress. He's listed under item donors. So this is how they kind of twist things to do this disinformation. But the fact of the matter is not only is the article accurate, but this specious disinformation that Mr. Vestal tried to engage in just got completely outed as well. So now he gets caught again. I hope that made a few of you smile. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for us. And again, pray for Chris Ann Hall down there in Florida right now, where the hurricane is coming right over her house. And pray for her and her family. And also, if you get a chance, go to Facebook/Patriot Radio US. Like the page. Share your ideas on the state flag for liberty. The new 51st state that we're going to be pushing come this next session. And also, if you want to donate, some of you, I think, really wanted to be there at the fundraiser last night. And thank you for sending your well wishes via messenger and text and email. But if you weren't able to make it, but you still want to help contribute, keep us on the air, you can go to VoteShea.com. Well, it's my pleasure to introduce today somebody that has been on the forefront of fighting for freedom in many different aspects, but specifically down in the state of Oregon, Dr. Art Robinson of the Oregon Institute of Science and Medicine. Thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be on your program.
So, We talk a lot about education on the program, and I know that kind of want to start off on the homeschool side of the house, if that's all right with you. But you have actually put together, at least you have used homeschool curriculum, and I want you to talk a little bit about homeschooling and also kind of what you're all about, what got you involved in the movement, and actually how long you've been involved in the movement for people that don't know who you are.
Well, we've been homeschooling for a long time because we decided to homeschool our family, our children, a long time ago. And my wife died when they were very young. We have six children. So we developed a self-teaching curriculum that didn't require a teacher. And that's become quite popular. About 60,000 students that use it today. The homeschooling, of course, is a response to the social decay in our schools as well as the academic decay. Parents who really want a good education for their children really have to take responsibility for it themselves. So we're prominent in the homeschool movement. We also would like to see the public schools improved. And a lot of public school students use our curriculum as a supplement. But the unions and the bureaucrats and politicians are making it very hard to improve the public schools. And under those circumstances, homeschooling is just increasing.
So aside from the obvious, you know, moral decay that is happening in the country, there really clearly is also decay in just learning the basics that we used to be taught, even when I was growing up, although probably not as much as when you were. But, you know, homeschool curriculum, people will say, well, how is it different? Isn't it probably less? Are they getting less educated than they would in a public school? If you can, describe the curriculum a little bit and what big key differences and contrasts there would be from public school.
Well, for a homeschool family, first they eliminate the social decay in the schools. And that rather than academics is the main driving force of homeschooling. The social moral environment of the schools has become so bad that many families just simply don't want this for their children. The academic angle, when I was a student 50 years ago in the public schools, they were great. We had the best schools in the world in America. That got me an entree to Caltech, and I've had a wonderful life in science, which I owe to the beginning I got in the public schools. But those schools aren't there anymore. Our schools are ranked almost last in the world in academics. A good homeschool curriculum emphasizes what you might expect, reading, writing, and arithmetic. Reading is the most important because it's a tool, and until you can read, you can't be educated because you can't read the books where the knowledge is. So reading is the most important. Writing is, of course, valued to communicate. And mathematics and science are ways of training your mind. Not everyone will use the math and science they learn, but everyone will benefit from having well-trained minds. In the 1900s in Britain, for example, even the children who were going to be soldiers and merchants and sailors were required to learn Latin and Greek, because Latin, Greek, and the works of the ancient authors were the highest level of knowledge they had, and that's what they trained the minds of the children with. Today we have mathematics and science, which are far more rigorous and even better ways of training the mind. So the arithmetic end, which is arithmetic through calculus and then physics and chemistry thereafter, is important knowledge in the technological age, but it's also the most rigorous thing we have to train a mind. So a good homeschool curriculum emphasizes first, the earliest days the child must become a good reader so they can be educated, writing, and then mathematics and science. And then, of course, all the other subjects, but depending on the interests of the family, maybe music, art, or whatever they're interested in. But these are sort of extracurricular activities, the things which the child must have in his mind are reading, writing, and quantitative thought.
Now, I want to be clear. So do you actually teach as part of this Greek and Latin?
No. Okay. Some families do, and that's fine if they're interested in that. Languages are of value. We have so many Hispanics in our country today, for example, but Spanish is a very practical language to learn. But some families like to have a lot of classes, like a classical education. They actually use Greek, Latin, and the ancient authors. Our founding fathers, of course, were completely educated in this way. But that's so there's a subset of homeschoolers that does do that. It's not the general rule.
So just looking at some of the homeschool curriculum, you kind of make a statement, and I think this is actually kind of an interesting statement to make. I'll make a comment when you're done, but that really you don't need a teacher as part of the homeschool curriculum that you put together. Could you explain that a little bit?
That's right. Well, of course, we were caught in that position. My wife is also a scientist, but she died suddenly of pancreatic disease, and the children were 1.5 to 12 years old, six of them. And I had to continue my work so that the family would have an income, and yet we didn't have a teacher. It's classical, normal homeschool. The mother becomes the teacher. So instead of a teacher, we had a nice schoolroom. We live in a rural environment on a farm. I had a separate building for this. And each child had a desk, a large desk of his own, except Matthew was 1.5. He got his desk when he was 5. And we worked on schooling that didn't require a teacher, and in fact, it doesn't. Once a child learns to read, he can be self-taught. And there are some advantages to this. Now, I'm a scientist, and I saw the advantages in a special way. Science involves problem-solving. And, of course, in schooling, that means problem-solving in math until you finish calculus, and then problem-solving in chemistry and problem-solving in physics. And the essence of science is learning how to work your mind through a problem and solve it. Well, this self-teaching is very good in this regard. We have special ways of metering the material to the students so that the slower student still learns but learns at a different rate, and people go faster and slower depending on what the subject is. But one of the big items, if the child is self-taught, and that means he gets up in the morning, let's say, and he knows that today he's going to work 30 math problems, and if he doesn't, if he misses one or two, he's going to have to figure out what's wrong because no one will help him. He builds self-confidence. And in problem-solving, half the job is experience and knowledge about solving problems, and the other half is self-confidence. And a child that is self-taught has tremendous self-confidence because he knows he does it on his own. And that, I was amazed at the result because my own children, they worked their way through math this way, but then the books I had were college-level, Caltech-level physics and chemistry. I gave them those books, and they just kept working problems. They didn't know any better. And they had the confidence to believe they could. So the self-confidence that comes with self-teaching is extraordinary. And also the mental habits. If you self-teach yourself literature, you learn to read, and then you read very widely, and the curriculum, of course, directs you and gives you books that are important for you to read. Self-confidence just builds and builds, and also independent thinking builds because you're doing your own thinking. Somebody's not thinking for you. So it's very valuable, the self-teaching, and that it was sort of unique when we did it. People urged us to clone it, and so the children put all the books and exercise and everything they used on a set of CDs and started a little business. And now they have 60,000 students, and they make books for them, even paper books. But the It was a necessity for us, and it's a necessity for many people. If the family structure is such that there isn't an adult who can be a teacher, they can teach in this way, and it in some ways works better than having a teacher.
Well,
the only thing that's required is discipline.
For the rest of their lives.
Also, children learn by example, so it's a good idea. What I would do, I'd have my desk in the same room. Daddy does his paperwork. I do my paperwork. So you set an example, and you have discipline. The child must do what he's asked to do. But beyond that, he can self-teach pretty well.
Right, and for the rest of their lives, then they have that, and they can, and you continue to learn. I mean, most of the things that I actually learned, I truly learned and found out about the truth was not in public school. It was actually outside of public school, reading books and teaching myself.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a great skill.
This encourages that. You see, there's a certain amount of basic knowledge, but as you just pointed out, it isn't the knowledge that's the most important. It's the study habits, the mental discipline, and the ability to absorb knowledge through reading and interacting with new knowledge. And you have things you use in teaching. Well, for example, in the mathematics, the child goes through calculus. Well, few children will use calculus unless they go into science or engineering, but it's very good for training the mind, and then you'll see some other subject. There's also an interesting wrinkle to this, too. We start with the math in the morning, and the child spends a couple hours on his math or on his science if he's finished his math. And this is also teaches a moral lesson, because for the first couple of hours every morning, he's looking for truth. There's no compromise in science. 2 + 2 = 4. It never changes. So in math and science, if he spends the first couple of hours every day in that, especially mathematics, the rest of the day his mind is looking for the truth in the other things he reads and studies, because there are absolute answers. And this, most homeschoolers also are, most of the United States are Christians. Some of them follow other religions. But most religions are based on one form or another of truth and morality. And a math problem is totally moral and absolutely true. So there's a little subliminal learning of that, too. The main thing is training your mind. And early you learn to read, so you can absorb the knowledge. And then you have to teach yourself to think. And a good mind has to be trained. It doesn't just come automatically.
No, it doesn't. It's developed over years and years, and then hopefully you get some wisdom through experience as well on top of it.
Yeah, that's one of the problems my children had was that now, of course, they're adults. 5 of them have doctoral degrees and 1 a master's. And they then we were living on a farm, controlling our own environment. After they became adults, became educated, they went into the outside world, and they learned that things out there weren't quite as benign as the environment they'd grown up in, but they had the tools to deal with it, at least the mental tools.
Well, if people want to get more information about your homeschool curriculum, where can they go on the internet to find out about it?
You can go to Robinson Curriculum. I think Robinson Curriculum in Google will find it. It's a Robinson self-teaching curriculum, and it's a very good curriculum, especially in math and science. It's won a lot of awards. But I don't mean to make an advertisement. You just ask. It's Robinson Curriculum or Robinson Self-Teaching Curriculum in Google, and you'll find the ads.
All right, perfect. And I'm going to actually put that up there right now on the Patriot Radio Facebook page. So if anybody does have a question, they'll have a direct link to it on that page. I want to shift gears a little bit. You've done a lot of work on so-called global warming. And yep. I'm going to kind of just ask a very open-ended question. What are your thoughts on global warming? And if you could tell us a little bit, too, about your petition project.
Well, of course, warming, the planet warms and cools. It has historically throughout observable history. We are in a very warm period now. If you look back hundreds of thousands of years, there are glaciations, ice ages, and then what are called interglacials, where the Earth is warm. And this is the most benign interglacial we've ever had in the last 600,000 years. It's been stable climate for a long time, fluctuating up and down, warming and cooling in accordance with planetary and various geological phenomena. The hypothesis that humans are causing the warming is just not true. We got into this because the Wall Street Journal asked me to write the editorial they ran during the Kyoto meetings long ago. and another one later, and the Enviros pretty much attacked us, so it got our attention, and we did our petition. But before doing the petition, then we stopped the science we were doing at that time for many months and read every research paper on this subject in existence and studied it carefully. And the hypothesis that humans are changing the temperature of the Earth is a failed hypothesis. There's overwhelming evidence against it and no evidence for it. That you wouldn't learn from reading the newspapers or the leftist propaganda, but that is, they are doing this for a different reason, especially the United Nations. The idea that humans can control the climate and that human activity must be controlled in order to make the climate benign transcends national borders. So it's a wonderful issue for the elitists who want to control people, take away people's freedom, take their liberty, because they can say, well, we have to take your liberty to save the planet. So the political phenomenon, it is a tremendous source of power and money for those who would take our freedom. Yet the scientific hypothesis that they are basing this on really has no merit. And we demonstrated, and in the climate changers have basically three strings to their bow. First, they say humans are changing the climate, and there's a consensus of almost all scientists who agrees with them. Second, they are trying to, they're on the white horses of idealism, trying to save the planet, and anyone who opposes them on a black horse of self-interest, wanting to destroy the planet for profit, that's their plan. But the consensus, what is the basis that scientists agree, is entirely false. And we just set out to demonstrate that, and we ran a petition. Several scientists, I organized it, but a number of prominent scientists organized this. And we petitioned our colleagues on this subject, and 31,000 American scientists and engineers, many very, very prominent ones, signed a petition urging the U.S. government to ignore this hypothesis because it's wrong and that we should not base public policy on a failed scientific hypothesis. And it's very, very important, not just to keep from making a mistake, but because the underlying issue is energy and energy production. And they demonized nuclear power in the 70s and deprived us of a wonderful technology. And now they're demonizing hydrocarbon power, coal, oil, and natural gas. But the energy is the currency of technological progress. Energy underlies everything we do. And it's not just us. Now, if our gasoline becomes twice as expensive and our home's a little colder because we can't heat them properly and so on, well, we'll still get by. It'll be an inconvenience and we'll be a little poorer. But there are hundreds of millions of people in the world who are still lifting themselves from poverty and tyranny by adopting and scrambling to get the technology of the modern age. All that technology currently is based on coal, oil, and natural gas. And to squeeze that technology and deprive them of that technology is literally to kill hundreds of millions of people. And unfortunately, that is also part of the hidden agenda, because there are many elitists who want to control the world, who believe world population should be lower, and they don't mind whether they cost the lives of hundreds of millions of people in Africa and Asia. So this is not just a failed hypothesis. This is a very dangerous hypothesis, because it will deprive the world of energy. And they are pushing, of course, solar energy and wind energy. Well, solar energy is a dilute form of energy, and we may shingle our houses eventually to get the little electricity we need in our houses, but it is not suitable for industrial production. Wind energy is almost a joke. It's just a government-subsidized propaganda exercise. But they're telling the people that there's an alternative. You don't need nuclear power. You don't need coal, oil, and natural gas. We'll substitute wind and solar. And that is totally false. You cannot run modern civilization on wind and solar energy. And so this is an additional lie. Solar power is developing, and it's nice, and in order to provide the industrial energy for the United States today, the solar power, you literally have to pave one-third of the surface of California with solar panels. That's, of course, impossible economically and any other way. So we can't keep our industrial civilization based on solar power, although it is a nice thing in some circumstances, and wind power is almost useless. So this is a very dangerous hypothesis that humans are causing climate change with hydrocarbon energy. And the other thing is an ironic is there is a strong environmental effect from burning hydrocarbon energy. The carbon that is below ground is mobilized and put in the atmosphere, and carbon dioxide is the main source of carbon for plants, and plants are the main source of carbon for animals. So there's an explosion throughout the world of more plants, more animals, and more diversity of plants and animals that is occurring, and it's occurring to a large extent because of the increase in carbon dioxide. Here in the Northwest, young seedlings of evergreen trees, pines, and fir grow 50% faster today than they did a century ago because of the carbon dioxide. So basically, this is the carbon dioxide is a wonderful gift from the industrial age. It's sort of an unexpected gift that is making the world have more lush plants, more lush in animals, because it's mobilizing carbon, which is the building block of plants and animals. So it's really a very beneficial effect. And these claims that climate change or climate disasters like hurricanes and floods and so forth are caused by humans is nonsense. Now, there is a warming phase. George Washington was at Valley Forge during one of the coolest periods in the last 2,000 years, and there's been a natural warming since then because the planet fluctuates in temperature up and down over the centuries due to natural phenomenon. We are in a warming phase, but we're coming out of a very cold phase. In fact, the temperature of the Earth today is approximately the same as the 3,000-year average. We're almost at the average today, but we're coming out of a cold period, so there is a warming trend, but humans have nothing to do with it.
So then that raises the question, if not humans, then what is causing it? And well, there is, are some yeah. – and then if you could also address, you know, you have the remote satellite data set – some of the measurements from ocean buoys and all of these things that actually have shown some cooling. And I've heard arguments back and forth. If you could explain that part of it, too.
Well, if the climate is complicated and is not totally understood. It appears that the main driving force of climate on a century-wide basis is the sun. The sun fluctuates in intensity, brighter and dimmer and so forth. And so solar activity correlates very well with the changes we've seen in the last two or three centuries. On a broader, longer scale, the Earth doesn't just follow a simple orbit around the sun with everything, all the other planets and all the other activities in the cosmos repeating themselves constantly in exactly the same way. There are lots of perturbations and complications in these planetary motions. And it's clear that the variations of the Earth on its axis and variation in its orbit and the other things which affect it has a long-term effect on climate as well. So there are these long-term effects that are really astronomical and shorter-term effects that are solar. Those appear to be the main driving effects. These climate models, you know, this is not based on reality. It's based on computer modeling. And the computer models are just false. We've studied these carefully, so have many other people. It's just propaganda. You can make a computer give you whatever answer you want. And people with a desire to get the billions of dollars the government is pouring into research on this jigger their computers to get results that aren't consistent with what governments would like to see. So it isn't fully understood, but it's clearly not humans. And that, and of course, there's been a lot of talk because for the last 15 years, there hasn't been any net warming, yet CO2 has gone on up. This is interesting. It's just a fluctuation. It's an accident. We could just as well have had a little warming over the last 15 years. It would not have supported the hypothesis because the correlation between CO2 and temperature CO2 doesn't warm things. Temperature actually affects CO2 concentration because the oceans have most of the CO2 on the planet is dissolved in the oceans. And when things get a little warmer, the CO2 outgasses from the oceans, you get a little more in the atmosphere. And then when the Earth cools, you get less. And this can be seen in the long-term geological record. And it's exactly what scientists measure in the laboratory. The vapor pressure is what a chemist calls it. The vapor pressure of CO2 over water or over seawater rises and falls with the temperature of the water. And the geological record reflects this exactly. We measure it in the laboratory. We see the same thing in the geological record. So it appears from the research that's been done that solar fluctuations and planetary, you know, astronomical fluctuations are responsible for the swings in temperature of the Earth. But this is still being researched. But the human effect is so small as to be negligible.
All right. Now, I want to address, I actually brought this up in a hearing in the House of Representatives in Washington State, that there were 31,000 scientists that had signed a petition. And I was immediately met with, well, those aren't experts. Those aren't, you know, real scientists. In fact, Mickey Mouse signed the list, et cetera. Could you address the validity of the 31,000 scientists signing the petition?
Firstly, you must understand, you don't do science by polling. So the purpose was to show there was no consensus, not to decide what the truth was. One man can be right, everybody can be wrong in science. That's the way it progresses. But as far as the 31,000 are concerned, firstly, this idea of bogus names and Mickey Mouse and so forth, that's just 100% false. It's just something the left puts out there. As far as we know, there was only one bogus name ever successfully put on the petition. It was put there by Greenpeace. Greenpeace USA, which used to be Ozone Action. And they forged this signature of a man who didn't, a person who didn't exist as a scientist, and got one name on. We removed it. That was in 1998. We did this petition twice. We're very careful about vetting, and there's no, and all of the, this is not an internet petition. We send a first class letter to the scientist at his known address, and he sends a first class letter back with his credentials written in longhand to verify who he is to us, and we check them carefully. So there are no bogus names. As far as credentials, there are a great many people who are expert in this subject that happen to sign the petition, because 31,000 scientists and engineers contain a lot of climatologists, a lot of people whose specialties are applicable. But the other thing that's important to understand, and with the petition, after we studied the literature, we wrote a review article, which was based on 150 peer-reviewed scientific articles that was also communicated to these people. The science that you can do on the climate is pretty simple because so little is known. So there are only a few parameters, as scientists call them, temperature. You can do a graph. For example, somebody says the rainfall is changing because of climate. Well, you look at, make a rainfall graph over the last 100 years, and it isn't. The science of this subject, that part that can be understood, is not very complex. And therefore, anyone with really good training in science or engineering can follow it and reach a proper conclusion. But as far as experts are concerned, there were a very large number of people who do have this as a specialty who signed the petition. A large number of meteorologists, a large number of climatologists, but a lot of people from other disciplines as well. So these were people with excellent minds, trained in math and science. Quite a few of them were expert in this field. But also it's important to understand that the scientific method, once you have been trained in that, if you look carefully at any data set, you can reach a correct conclusion. Now, if you're looking at the most esoteric aspects of high-energy physics, you need special training. But this is not. This is pretty simple stuff. Sometimes it comes down to just a simple graph. For example, they say, oh, well, that hurricane, big, big, bad hurricane, that must have been caused by humans. But then you go back in history, way before humans were producing any significant CO2, and you draw a graph of hurricane incidence and severity as a function of time, there's no increase. That's just requires requires reading a graph, and anyone with training in quantitative thought can see the answer. So it's not a complicated subject. Anyone who really understands how to think in math and science can understand it. These people are all trained in that way, and a great many of them are expert in this field, but that's just a chance thing because some scientists concentrate in this field, and those people signed as well.
Now, you're a professor of chemistry.
There are no bogus names. The bogus name thing is just nonsense.
So, and you're a professor of chemistry yourself.
Yeah, I was trained at Caltech and UC San Diego and served on the faculty of UC San Diego teaching chemistry for a number of years. And I've been my whole life in just been spent in scientific research, mostly physical science. My son, Noah, who was a co-author of our efforts, is a PhD from Caltech in chemistry. And interestingly, which scientist signed it most readily? And if you look at the statistics, physicists were most likely to sign our petition because they think most rigorously, physicists and mathematicians. Chemists were next most likely. Now, when you get to biologists, they tend to have a more qualitative science. They don't think as rigorously, and there weren't as many biologists. But physicists signed it very easily because they're trained to think rigorously about this kind of subject. The credentials of the people signing this were unimpeachable. And you can go on the Internet. There's a site, petitionproject.org. All the names of everyone who signed is there, and a detailed summary of their credentials and their fields of specialization is there as well. This puts the lie to all these things that you mentioned. But in the political world, people make false claims depending on the fact that most people won't have the time or interest to look up the truth.
And amen to that. That is exactly right. Not looking at the primary source documents, not following what is accepted methodology. Absolutely. Well, in the last couple of minutes that we have left, if you could comment very quickly on there's one thing that you could tell all the listeners. We broadcast throughout all of Eastern Washington, North Idaho, and Northeast Oregon. One thing you could tell the listeners that they could be doing to help educate their friends, family, neighbors on either global warming and its fallacy or on some other subject that would help the battle for freedom and liberty, if you could expand on that.
Okay,
well,
your children, give them great educations in quantitative thought and reading. They are the future, and they must be able to think. Our enemies depend upon people not having trained minds and not being able to think. Today, there's only one thing that you must study. This is a constitutional republic. We are engaged in a great battle to save a constitutional republic on a democratic playing field. America was never intended for that, but that's the purpose. We are trying to save our republic. Upon our republic, our freedom, our liberty, our property, everything about our way of life depends. Everyone should read his constitution and do his best, whether it's a local candidate, a state candidate, a national candidate, vote. Involve yourselves in the political process, but be especially concentrate on the rules of our constitutional republic. That is the fight today. Our science depends upon freedom of thought. That will die if our constitutional republic dies. Our lives depend upon our property and our liberty, and of course our way of life, our biblical life. The Bible depends upon us having the liberty to choose the right way. All of the things that define us as Americans and human beings depend upon this tremendous blessing we had that for the first time in human history, there was a government that protected the life, liberty, and property of its people. That is our constitutional republic. The rules are written in a simple way in our constitution, and that should be the primary and first study of any American who wants to save his country.
Goodness said it better. Wow. Thank you very much, Dr. Robinson, for joining me on Patriot Radio today. We'll have you on again, and just really appreciate the work that you're doing in the battle for freedom and liberty down there, and especially on the homeschooling front. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, and it's been a privilege to be on your program. Thank you for all your work.
All right. God bless. Dr. Art Robinson, Oregon Institute of Science and Medicine. And I just posted In the last couple of minutes I got here, I just posted up on Patriot Radio's Facebook page a little summary of what he talked about with this list of 31,000 scientists and the fact that they have signed the petition that there is no convincing scientific evidence that human release of carbon dioxide, methane, or other greenhouse gases is causing or will in the foreseeable future cause catastrophic heating of the Earth's atmosphere and disruption of the Earth's climate. Can't get really any more plain than that. And I believe that it's really important because I witnessed this myself in a hearing where the left immediately said, well, you know, fake people signed the petition. I also put on there that what Dr. Robinson said, that only once since its inception, but this is back in 1998, Greenpeace was able through forgery to add a false name to the list and that name was removed. So there it is conclusively. And I really want to thank everybody out there for joining me on the 150th episode of Patriot Radio. 150. Man, time flies. I want to thank everybody else, too, that joined me last night at the fundraiser up in Green Bluff at Tretzi Farm Winery. Really had a great time up there. Great seeing everybody. Glenn Morgan with We the Governed was there talking about some of the things that he's doing on the west side of the state and the fact that we're in this fight for freedom together. And as Dr. Robinson said, we also have to make sure we're teaching our children to be able to teach themselves and become independent thinkers, voracious readers, people that really want to go out there and not go with the flow, but defend freedom and liberty at the most fundamental and local level. And that really, I think, should encourage everybody out there. Like I said at the beginning of the program, there is nowhere else to run to. We need to stand up, look our enemies in the eye, and we need to fight. Well, thank you once again for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Despite the internal evil we're facing, we still live in the greatest country in the world. May God bless all of you, and may He make this generation the greatest one.